Welcome to
Mile High Hockey Lab.
Mile High Hockey Lab.
I am your host, Ezra Parter, and I'm joined by our fellow writers on the site. Everybody introduce yourself. We'll start with you, Jacob.
Hi, I'm Jacob.
Perfect. Jack.
Oh, hi. I'm here.
Okay, great. And Adrian Hernandez.
I'm here. I did it. We did it.
Excellent. We are all writers on the site and podcasters on this podcast. Good job. You're listening to it. We have a great show for you planned for today. A bunch of stuff to talk about. But before we do, I have to let you know that if you're listening to this show live on YouTube, you're a gem. Good job. If you haven't already, please like and subscribe it. That helps us a ton. If you're listening to this podcast later and you're like, wow, I wish I was watching it on YouTube. Yeah, we do too. But good job as well. Like and subscribe on your podcast app too. We appreciate that too. We record these and put them out live, and then they're available as podcasts the day after the show. Anywhere that you want to hear a podcast, except oddly the podcast player I use, but that's okay. Spotify, iTunes, and Audible. We'll get into that later, Adrian. I was meaning to talk to you about it. And yeah, we're going to talk about the games that we've played so far this week, Vancouver and Seattle. We count the weekend as the week. And because we are coming to you on a Monday, we're going to get into a live poll about our defense, and talking about some injuries and, talking about what's going on with SB Nation. But before we get into all that, we have to get to what we said we'd start with, which of course is the wins against Vancouver and Seattle. So yeah, I mean, I really enjoyed those games. I don't know about you. I like a good win. The Vancouver game, though, I wasn't able to watch very much of. Jacob, do you have thoughts on that?
Yeah, you know, it was a little weird just because the main, you know, theme of that game, you know, we're so Avalanche centric here, but it was, you know, it was Bruce Boudreau. That was the story of, you know, the entire NHL this week, and so it was. You know, the Avalanche, they took care of business. They beat the crap out of Vancouver. You know, it was one of those games that, you know, we're used to as Avs fans, at least last year, where they just jump out, you know, early on, get on the other team, and it's just kind of over early on. And so that made it, you know, a little somber, I would say, just watching Boudreau kind of go out like that. You know, you hear the Bruce, there it is, chants, and you almost felt bad. But it's like, this is, you know, it's not the Avalanche's fault, obviously. It's because Vancouver as an organization is the biggest mess in the NHL right now. But, you know, it was essentially kind of rubbing the salt in a very open and deep wound out in Vancouver.
Yeah, that situation is crazy. If you only pay attention to Colorado and you don't know what we're talking about, speculation around Bruce Boudreau being fired has been going on for about a month, and it's pretty much confirmed that he was going to be replaced. He played out the string and was finally replaced this morning or yesterday by Rick Tocchet. And yeah, against the Avs, the crowd was cheering for him. And then I believe it was last night the crowd was cheering for him again in a home loss. And he teared up when they said, Bruce, there it is. It's a nice moment, you know, seeing how much those fans respected him. But we're an Avalanche pod. So, Jackie, anything about the Avalanche play in Vancouver that stood out to you?
Well, I actually think it was sort of a big game in a way. Like, the Avs had something to prove just because – they had lost to Vancouver twice already this year, so they had to avoid the sweep, and they had won three games at that point, so they were starting to look a lot better, starting to roll, but it was important for them to win this game, and it's good that distractions didn't get to them. I mean, obviously they weren't about their team, but there's just a lot of non-hockey things going on, and it can affect both teams, so I'm glad that that didn't happen. They scored a couple power play goals, so I think that was also important to get that rolling. I think they were both 5-on-3s, so that they does were. Change it a little bit, but then on the other hand, like, you just absolutely have to score on a 5-on-3 if you're given one, and they did, and so I think those are also some positives to take out of that game.
Yeah, and they'd spent so much of that terrible December, January power play streak of a lack of finish, not finishing on 5-on-3s when they had the opportunity. So it is great to see that. Adrian, was there anything more to the Seattle matchup the next night, given that their lineup has so many former Avalanche, Grubauer, Burakovsky?
I would say you'd probably guess yes, based on just like the personality types on the Avalanche roster, and honestly the guys' personality types of the guys who left. Like, it's pretty well documented that Andrei Burakovsky and Nathan MacKinnon were pretty close while he was in Colorado. And I think, like, if that remains true, it's always fun to play your friends and to beat your friends so that when you go to dinner the next night, you have some shit to talk. So I think, like, that definitely plays a factor, especially for guys specifically like MacKinnon and Rantanen, and maybe even a guy like Gorgiev, who's facing, you know, a former Avalanche goaltender. It's probably like a tip in the cap to get one over the other guy. Or was it Frankie Annette that night? I can't remember.
Yeah,
but
it was.
Yeah, it's Frankie, same even more so there. Like, Frankie just beat his old teammate, the guy who was the 1A, so to speak, above him. I mean, that's kind of a feather in his hat. And I think, like, it brings more to the matchup every time the Avs and the Seattle Kraken play, especially now that the Kraken are a little bit better than people expected them to be.
Absolutely. And Burakovsky, of course, was out injured that game, but it would have been nice to see them reunite. And I imagine they did behind the scenes.
Oh, yeah.
Burakovsky's such a like funny dude. I'm sure he was good to joke around.
Well, yeah. And you see like Abe Kubel and Kemper watching the Avs skate today ahead of the Capitals game. So anybody in that locker room when they won the championship, I think anytime they meet each other again, or even in the years leading up to that, like, it's a little bit more special, or there's a little bit more to play for. Not that you have to get up for an NHL hockey game if you're a pro, but it's always fun to play guys you used to know, I feel like.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That makes total sense. Now, the Avs went from a five-game losing streak right into a five-game winning streak that we're currently hoping to extend tonight against Washington, like you said. Jacob, what do you credit to that turnaround?
I mean, Val Nichushkin, right? That's kind of the story of the season. For real. That, you know, when Nichushkin is in the lineup, they're the Avalanche, and when he's not, they're not. And, I mean, you can really just see it, you know, in their streakiness this year, you know. The beginning of November, they won, it was 7 out of 8, and then they went and lost, like, you know, 5 of their next 8, and then they win 5 of their next 6, and then they lose 7 of their next 8, and then now they're on a 5-game winning streak. And so, like, it's, you know, it's kind of emblematic of a team that's still trying to find their way and find this year's identity. You know, last year's identity was depth, and that, you know, their second line was better than most teams' first lines on any given night. And now, you know, this year, you know, you have to twist Bednar's arms to play 4 full lines on any given night. And so I think that, you know, really what we're seeing is a team that I think is on the upswing. They are starting to figure it out, but, you know, this pendulum that they're on, where they're either really, really good or really, really bad and nothing in between, it's, you know, it's a little bizarre, you know, for a Stanley Cup champion.
It is really amazing how much of a difference Nichushkin makes, because it's not just his on-ice play. Like, obviously on the ice, he's finishing well, and he's a defensive stalwart. We know that. He's so great at funneling the opposing forwards through the neutral zone into where the defense wants them to be, and then winning puck battles. But it's also what he does to where people are placed in the lineup, right? Like, seeing For Alex sure. Newhook getting to be a third-line center with O'Connor and Cogliano and being really effective in that role is really exciting, and it's made possible by Nichushkin's return, and it's only going to get better when Landeskog gets back too. Jackie, Pavel Francouz and Alexander Gogarev are shaping up to be one of the league's best goalie combinations. Obviously, Daryl Sutter, when they were playing Calgary, was saying it's the league's best 1A and 1B. Do you think they should be splitting time more evenly going forward, or should we see more Georgiev? What are your thoughts?
I think they probably should trend a little bit more towards a split. And we'll see what happens going forward, since I think Bednar even said that he thinks Georgiev looks better with a little bit of a break. And so maybe they don't want to ride him quite as hard as they did through the month of December. And obviously with Francouz missing some time, that made that a necessity. But it should be maybe closer to like a 60-40 split, I think. Both are playing well, and that's a luxury. So, yeah, I'd probably like to see it evened out a little bit more, even though I think it is important to still make Georgiev feel like the starter and he's the guy you'd start in a big game or something like that. But I think you need to utilize both of them because that is sort of the strength of the team this year.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely been a backbone to this turnaround as well, alongside Nichushkin. You mentioned keeping Georgiev feeling like he's a number one. Do y'all think that he is that his confidence is affected by seeing Francouz taking games, or that he's just relishing this rest?
I don't necessarily. I think they make it clear enough. I think Francouz is like the perfect backup. Like, he's just never looking to sort of sneak in and thwart the number one. Like, I think he's the perfect support for a number one. And so I don't think Georgiev should feel threatened. So I don't really think it's about that, or it's really going to come to that unless things go really crazy. So I think, I don't really think that's anything going on behind the scenes, but it's still like a confidence thing, right? Mm-hmm. Like, if you're brought in to be the team's number one, you kind of still need to feel like the team's number one.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
That's, yeah. So that's the kind of catch 22 that the NHL is in, that, you know, having a 1A and 1B goalie is all the rage. That's kind of the, you know, accepted wisdom, is that's how you get through a regular season, is you have to have two goalies. You can't, you know, there's only one Vasilevsky. There's only one Shesterkin. If you don't have one of those guys, you need two. But mm-hmm. come playoffs, you can't play two. You have to play one. So, like, it's a delicate balance to try to figure this out, where you say, okay, we're going to give both of these guys enough reps to the point where they feel like, you know, they are part of the team. They're central to these team's fortunes. But at the same time, you need to make it clear that come playoff time, one of those guys is the guy. And you can't have, you know, it's the old adage about two quarterbacks. If you have two quarterbacks, you have none. And that's kind of the case come playoff time with goalies, right? Is that if you don't have one that you're settling on, you know, you might be in trouble.
Yeah, and
go ahead.
Sorry, analytically, like, Georgiev is, I think, 13th in the league in goals saved above expected. And that's, like, with goalies that have had, like, at least 10 starts, I want to say. And then Francouz is a little bit further down that list. He's, like, I want to say, like, 23, 24. So I think with that being said, obviously, deeper analytics don't tell the whole story. They tell a part of it. A very detailed and logical part of it, but it just goes to show that I think, like, that stat tells you two things: one, he doesn't quit, and two, like, that probably seeps into the psychology of his teammates, right? Like, if you know you make a mistake in front of Georgiev, it's not to say the confidence isn't there with Frankie, but, like, you've seen it be backed up by a save or two with Georgiev when they get beat, mm-hmm. And that has happened for Frankie as well. Frankie's probably one of my favorite guys in terms of making saves that he probably shouldn't. I don't know at what rate that is in comparison. Obviously, it's not as high of a rate, but his are a little bit flashier. I think it's just the silly sideness of him that kind of brings that to the table. But with the whole Georgiev and Frankie situation, like Jackie said, I think they've made it pretty clear that Frankie's the backup, and they've made that clear about him throughout his career. Like, even when he was really doing well the last couple of years before injury, mm-hmm. and the fans were saying, let's put Frankie in it. Even Frankie was like, yeah, I'm a backup. I'm just doing this until our guy gets back. So I think the message is pretty clear. And going back to the, if you have two goalies, you don't have any, that's entirely accurate. Like, look who played last Stanley Cup final. It was basically Darcy Kemper with one eye instead of Pavel Francouz. So, you know, that just goes to show there was a one and a two last year, although they kind of told us otherwise.
Mm-hmm. And Frankie is, like we've said, Frankie is the perfect attitude to be a number two. I think I don't know him personally, but I just think Michael Cera. Like, he's just so, he's like, yeah, I'm here, I got you. He's great. Now, end of the world. Yeah, that Michael Cera is Georgiev. that's a great movie. We are going to do a live poll here on Twitter, where we want to find out who folks think the Avs should keep around when Bo Byram, Josh Manson, and Cale Makar get healthy on that defense. We are expecting them to come back after the All-Star break, all three of them. Cale Makar hopefully sooner. Josh Manson was skating in a red jersey this morning, and Kale was back in black, so that's good. But you know, we've got a couple of options to bench on the Avs defense. There's Curtis McDermott, there's Andreas Engelin, there's Brad Hunt, there's Jacob McDonald, and the fan favorite to bench obviously is Sam Girard. Fan favorite as a I completely disagree with them fan, but yeah. So what do you all think about this? Jacob, we'll start with you. Who would you sit? We got three guys coming back, three guys to sit. Where do you start?
I mean, of all of the guys to keep, I would say it's Brad Hunt. You know, that guy, he's found a scoring touch. You know, he has as many goals on the year as Devon Toews does. He has as many goals on the year as Samuel Girard does. He's got more goals than Bowen Byram, Josh Manson, Martin Kaut. I mean, he has a howitzer of a shot. That's the thing that's kind of kept him around the NHL all these years. And, you know, he plays this, he's the Avalanche style as far as this kind of undersized defenseman who's really good at moving the puck. You know, he's has the right amount of urgency, I think, getting it out of his own zone where it's not, you know, he knows that it's got to get out soon, but he's not panicking. And that, you know, again, that howitzer of a shot, that's the tiebreaker, you know, against Englund and McDermott and McDonald. If you put the puck in the back of the net, you got to stay in the NHL.
Wanted to add something about Hunt. I think the reason why he's looking better is because he's kind of like improved through his whole time. And I think Englund, if you had asked this question like 2 weeks ago, I think Englund would have been the guy to keep, but he's sort of not been playing as much and regressing a little bit. So it really is a toss up between the two. I would expect both of them to go before either McDonald or McDermott though. And about Hunt, like he does have a really hard shot, but it's really unpredictable and inaccurate. So when it does connect and go in the back of the net, it looks amazing. When it doesn't, a lot of self clears, a lot of really bad missed shots. So that's kind of the difference between what keeps the guy in the NHL and AHLers. Like guys like Hudon can look really good, but is it ever really going in the net? So that's kind of something I keep in mind.
Interesting.
But to get back to the McDermott question, yeah, I've been befuddled for like 2 years now. I don't really get it. He does seem like a really nice guy. You know, we always got to say that, you know, we don't want to hate on him as a person because it does seem like his teammates really enjoy him and everything like that. But to that, I also say there's a lot of nice guys in the AHL that don't get the opportunity either. So
Peyton Middleton,
that shouldn't be the reason why somebody gets to stick around. And on the intimidation thing, it doesn't make sense to me either because he's not that guy. Like he's huge and he can deliver a couple big hits, but he's not aggressive. He doesn't go after guys. There is no retaliation. This is why he doesn't fight that much because he's not that guy. Like he's almost too nice. He's a gentle giant is what mm-hmm. he really is. Like Englund has been in more fights, I think, since he's been in the lineup.
Mm-hmm.
There's other guys.
He can throw him too. Englund can throw him.
That are way more, way more intimidating in that way. Mm-hmm. Like to me, the argument isn't even like, does that bring value? It's that he is not that guy. He's not what you hear on altitude. He's not what the narrative says about him. And that's the part that drives me the craziest, I think, is because he's not even doing that. And Bednar doesn't believe in retaliation either. Anything that happens, he's always like, nope, move on to the next shift. Like they're never looking for payback. So if, it's just so funny when you hear like, oh, send McDermott after him. It's like, they literally don't do that.
I love those altitude guys being like, oh yeah, he's out there. He's making sure nobody's going to challenge him. Nobody's ever going to challenge him. It's like, no, he's not going to challenge anyone. He's just out there.
I'd be interested to see if the combined fights McKinnon and Landeskog have gotten in, is that more than all of the fights that McDermott has gotten in? Just because like it seems like it should be
for
about
sure, Landy.
And this isn't to say that we want him to fight more. This is like a positive that he doesn't fight to me. But he also has no other positives, so it's I don't understand. And Jackie's right. We don't want to hate him on him as a person. I'm sure everybody says he's a super good locker room presence. That's great. But I mean, can we talk about the Seattle game for Curtis? He was out there falling over every shift. Every time a puck hit him, it was a turnover. I swear, like, the trade was Curtis McDermott for a fifth round pick and a guarantee that when he plays Seattle, he doesn't wear skates. It was insane. I couldn't believe what I was watching. Like, how is that an NHL player? Yeah. And I know, yeah. I know we just got into this hockey is for everyone controversy with what was happening in Philadelphia with Ivan Provorov. And it is for everyone, but it's not for people who can't skate.
Yeah, that's, and you know, it's funny that you say that too, because that's totally like the antithesis of Colorado's identity. Like the Avalanche are known as a very fast, very talented skating team. Like Cale Makar's the best skater, probably defenseman skater, at least in the league. So it's kind of like a contradiction to what it feels like the Avs are trying to do and formulate and within their lineup, which is why, like, I think he's the obvious choice for who you sit and who you scratch, because pretty much anybody else that you have to replace him with fits that fits the Avs stylistically better.
100%. And I like this. Oh, go ahead. Sorry, Jackie.
I was going to say, I will say in his credit, I think they've worked on his offense as a defenseman. I think as a forward, he provides nothing.
Right.
It's just easier to hide him. But as a defenseman, they have implemented their system and their style that he is able to generate a little bit from the back end. It's just the unfortunate part is that he has to be defending as a defenseman. And that's sort of the problem. Like, I know they like to keep him because he can play both. And then if he doesn't play for like 3 weeks, if the miracle ever happens and they're healthy, then so be it. Like, I get that. But to me, it's odd that they're doing the same thing with McDonald as well. It's like, you definitely don't need two of these, like, pick between them. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's stranger that they decided to then double down with this strategy that didn't ever seem to work. And now they're just keeping McDonald around.
Yeah, and it was...
Sorry, let me give you guys a live poll update. So right now it's 41% Curtis McDermott, 7% Sam Girard. More people are voting for Sam Girard than Brad Hunt.
And people out of
Jacob McDonald is the winner right now with 49%, which kind of lines up with what Jackie's saying. It's like those two dudes do the same thing.
Yeah, and just like to piggyback off of Jackie's points, I don't understand why McDonald, like, they even pretend that he's a forward, because the only, like, every game that they do dress him as a fourth line center or a fourth line winger, he gets like two or three shifts and plays, you know, like 2 minutes the entire night. Just like, what is the point of that? You know, I get that you want to develop the kids down, you know, in the AHL, but you're telling me that like Sampo Ranta couldn't give better minutes than Jacob McDonald could on the fourth line?
Apparently not after what he did in Ottawa last week. But, sorry, Sampo, but that was rough. But yeah, I mean, it doesn't make any sense. And I will say Jacob McDonald defensively against Seattle was solid. I didn't mind him. Against Vancouver, he was up and down. And last week, I thought there were some more minuses than pluses. So maybe he's rounding into like capable again. But and he was so fun when he was new. Remember? Oh, that was great. But yeah, for me, it's got to be put McDermott in the press box, put Jacob McDonald back in the AHL, let Englund or Brad Hunt be your seventh defender. I like Englund. I know he had some rocky play and got benched for a bit, but I like him a lot. I think he's for sure a third pairing defenseman in the NHL, whether here or somewhere else in the near future. But yeah, God, I can't believe they're 7% for Girard.
Yeah, we got nine. It's
and
up
the
to
sad
nine.
Thing is I don't think it's all an ironic 7%.
It's no, not.
I'd be willing to wager that's like 90% serious. Like all of
them. Yeah.
No, I mean, I hopped in my car last week and just turned on Altitude Radio, and the first thing I hear are people psychoanalyzing Sam Girard. And it's really like, it has become like a really bizarre obsession at this point, where like there's a certain stripe of Avs fan where all they ever want to do is talk about Sam Girard. There's nobody else on the team who like even comes up. It's just as, you know, as soon as anything negative happens, it's like, oh, that was Sam Girard's fault. It's like, he wasn't even on the ice. What are you talking about?
Yeah, he has 2 points like, and his plus one in the last five. So what are we talking about?
Yeah, I mean, it is true that he doesn't put up the offensive numbers that he used to. That's true. But then there are plays he makes defensively that are like, oh, he's still the same guy. He's just not as assertive and not as effective, but he's still there.
But what's funny about you saying that, though, like his offensive statistics, he's never been a goal scorer. Like his high has been 5 goals. He's had 1, 3, 4, 4, 5, 5, and 3 so far this season. If he gets 2 goals in the next month, he's going to have a career high in goals. You know, he's
had some big goals. I think he scored twice in the playoffs.
He's got half as many points as he did last season in about half as many games. And he's got, I mean, in the season before that, they only played 44 or 48 and he had 16 points. So it's, 32 points. I don't get, he's been a top 4 defender since he's been in the league. And he came into the league at a young age. People forget, and I think this has a lot to do with Cale Makar's presence here. Because we see how quickly Cale went from the kid who won the Hobie Baker and scored against his old team in the playoffs to the most dominant defender in the world. And that accelerated path, I think, sheds a light on other people, other young defenders in particular. That's just not realistic for them to live up to. Like, what do people want from Sam Girard, I guess, is my question.
Well, the other thing is, as amazing as Cale is, and he does create a lot of offense himself, he does also benefit from quarterbacking the first power play unit.
Yep.
That's about 20 to 25 free points for any defenseman in the league is to be on the power play unit like that. So, and I also feel like this light is cast on Byram where it's like, oh, well, maybe his offense will develop one of these days. And it's like, he's pretty much at a half a point per game for his career. And that includes at the beginning of his career, he really didn't score that much. But it's like, just because he didn't score a goal in the playoffs last year, it's like Byram has no offense. Like, he scored a goal before Makar this year. And he has 5, I think 2 goals and 3 assists in the 10 games that he's played this year. And he gets a lot of his at even strength. And so you definitely have to be comparing apples to apples here. And I agree with Girard. Like, and I think he's on a, I don't know exactly what it is, but he's on a decent points run lately. But that's also part of the team. Like, the whole team wasn't scoring a 5-on-5. So he doesn't get power play points. And so when the whole team's suffering at 5-on-5, where do you expect him to get the offense?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, there is the power play, the second unit that, you know, would be nice if the second unit got kicking. But I think we got spoiled last year when the second unit was top line players and on other teams. So, you know, having Andre Burakovsky as your second line shooter or second unit shooter is pretty good. A lot of, if you see him scoring a ton in Seattle this year, you know, he belongs on a first power play unit. So that definitely contributed. But I will say Girard at his peak put up 34 points in 1920. And right now he's on pace for 20 points, which is a down year. It's definitely a down year. But then that said, he had 23 last year and everybody was happy with his play. So I don't know. It's not really fair to judge him based only on the numbers. I do want to judge him a little bit based on how effective he is at turning pucks over in the defensive zone and getting things going offensively. It's been a little bit rougher this year, I think. I don't have the underlying numbers ahead of me, but or in front of me, excuse me, but it has been a little bit rougher. But on the flip side of that, he's, you know, working pucks out to Sampo Ranta and other guys who wouldn't normally be in the NHL. So it's not really apples to apples, like Jackie was saying.
Yeah, it's a weird spot where, like, you know, Girard hasn't been perfect. And I think that one of the bigger issues that you can identify with the Avs is that the second defensive pairing has gotten worked a lot throughout this whole stretch. Now, how much of that is because, you know, Bednar hasn't had a fourth line to play. And so he's had a bunch of, you know, tired forwards that have made life extra difficult on Girard and Johnson. Like, that's all intertwined. And so, you know, Girard is absolutely deserving of some criticism. It's just that a lot of the criticism is like certifiably insane. You want this guy off the team, like, sure, like, say drop him down to the third defensive pairing or whatever, and, you know, cut his minutes and try to send a message, but like, you want to bench this guy for Curtis McDermott? What? Like,
yeah, right. Doesn't make any sense.
What if I told you to go ahead, Jackie?
I was gonna say, I found a really odd statistical anomaly with Girard, and I haven't looked it up in the last couple weeks, but he does really well with Francouz, and I don't know why. Maybe it's just a weird I don't know, anomaly. But then with Georgiev, it's really bad. And so, like his on-ice save percentage is what I'm talking about. So like with Francouz, it was like a 960, and with Georgiev, it was like an 860 or something like that. Like that wide of a spectrum. And so I don't know if there's anything to it, if it's like communication or because Francouz catches on the other side. And then I know that Sam is the one that has to switch sides a lot. Like he plays right defense a lot if he's not with Eric Johnson. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if that maybe works into it. I just thought it was a really strange difference there. So I'm also kind of watching, like, now that Francouz is back and playing more, is Girard suddenly looking better? Is there something to that or not? I don't know.
Yeah,
I hope so.
That's really interesting.
Funny enough, now, too, we talked a lot about Girard's defensive zone giveaways. He has one less than Devon Taves and 11 less, half as many as Cale Makar. Now, obviously, Cale Makar is on the ice for like 27 minutes a night, so that's going to happen. He's just going to have more of every stat, pretty much. But like to sit here and expect like to act as if Girard is giving the puck away more than anybody else is kind of naive and not true. Sure, maybe situationally you see the giveaway and situationally it hurts more, but on a strictly number basis, the guy only has 17 giveaways, like what they consider true giveaways, which is like passing the puck right to the other team. So like he's really kind of floating in a familiar territory, something he's always really done. Now you can say, well, the fans have always had an issue with him and his giveaways. I don't think that's true. When Girard kind of first came in as a result of the trade, people were very excited about him. And also, you know, they loved his play style, especially the Tornad. Like that was everybody was like, oh man, the Avs have won this trade already because Sam Girard. So it's just funny to me how quickly it went from look at how promising and young and what a great contract Sam Girard is on to, oh my gosh, this guy is a problem. We got dudes holding up signs in Avalanche jerseys.
That's so sad, really.
In opposing arenas saying trade Girard. You know, like that's tell me you're out of touch without telling me you're out of touch. Like just because you can buy a jersey doesn't make you a fan, and that person is proof. If that's how you express your fandom, I invite you to go be a fan of the Boston Bruins because that shit doesn't fly for me. I'm just saying.
That guy was undercover trying to get Gerard traded.
Maybe he wasn't. Yeah, that's true. Maybe he was a Canucks fan. Doing a little
trade Gerard to us.
Psychology. I will say, I mean, I admit that I have been a Gerard fan. I have a Gerard reverse retro. So I wear that proud, especially when I feel like he needs a little bit of extra support. It's the Vegas series. Like he got scapegoated for that, and that series was not his fault. Like that's when they had Nemeth. The whole team was terrible. They just kept zooming in on him on NBC. Like it's their fault. They were the ones that started that narrative and was like, "Oh boy, Sam Girard was on the ice," and it was like he was the one trying to basically do three people's jobs. Like he's the one back. Usually, the one guy that's back isn't the one that caused the problem.
Yeah, good
right.
Point.
Yeah, say yeah. But he's playing up fires.
Yeah,
yeah. But he's the one. Like, oh, it's a 3-on-1, and look, Girard didn't stop the pass, so it's his fault. And
if you still think that he was the problem in the Vegas series, you did not watch because the problem in the Vegas series was the second line, and the Avs did not have an answer for their second line. Their second line just absolutely dominated over and over again. We couldn't get the puck from him, and that had nothing to do with Sam Girard, unless he was on the ice, but. You know, like that was like Jackie, you said, that was a complete team effort. And honestly, they lost as a team to the Knights. We didn't have what it took that year. That's what we found out. But it had nothing to do with Girard. And everyone's going to say, well, the Avs finally did it. And guess who was out of the lineup with injury? Good for you. Good for you.
He scored against St. Louis. Like, it's not like he did nothing. I mean, he was a huge part of why they won, the first two games against St. Louis. So... You can't say like, oh, they only won because they didn't have him. I think they won because they had Byram that was able to take those minutes is really why I think they won.
But it
wasn't because they didn't have Girard. And it's like, I think it's good that you guys have pointed out that he does deserve some criticism this year. Like he has been on the ice for a lot of goals against. That's true. Like I said, I pointed out for some reason him and Georgiev don't mix. Like, I don't know. Maybe that's part of a little bit of the reason, but it's just, it's unfair to the point that you want him off the team, like you guys said. And honestly, I do think there's bias. His size, his French, you know, there's a reputation like, oh, players from the Q, they can't defend. Like, there's still that bias. Yeah. And, you know, you can definitely see the bias showing is what I say. Like, everyone's free to like who they like and dislike who they dislike. But, you know, it's frustrating when you can definitely see there's obvious size and type bias.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well,
go ahead.
I think the thing that's so frustrating about it, like going back to that Vegas series, how everybody just, you know, that's the only lens in which they look through Sam Girard, you know, the complaints that are made against him that, you know, he's small, he's soft, he's not physical enough. If you listen to the Avs after that series, they said that was the entire team's problem, that they just didn't match Vegas's physicality, that, you know, if you want to call him soft, I guess like that's, you know, the way that they played that series. And they took away from that series saying we need to be a bigger and more physical team. And so, you know, it's very unfair to sit there and focus it on Girard when you know, if you listen to guys like Nathan MacKinnon after that series, they were basically saying the same thing about the entire team. And so, you know, the next year they come back and they win it all. They prove that they did take, you know, lessons from that series, everyone on the team. And yet, you know, everybody except for Sam Girard gets a pass now that, you know, we're all looking at the Avs as this post Stanley Cup team, but Sam Girard is the only one stuck in the Vegas series.
And the other thing is big guys don't clear the crease either. Like, there's tons of clips this year from Englund not clearing, Johnson, McDermott, and even Manson not clearing the crease. To me, that's the craziest narrative because it's just not true. So that's also part of the everybody needs to defend, right? And and that gets to your point, Jacob, that it's not just the small guys that got run over. It's everybody.
Mm-hmm. And that old style of clearing the crease is very 90s hockey. It's not really how it's done now. What you want to do is win your puck battles and get the puck up the ice. And Girard is good at that. So I don't know what the deal is. This bias that we've talked about is really, really clear. I didn't recognize that NBC was the source. But I guess you heard it here first.
And breaking
NBC
news,
hates our short king.
It didn't work for the Golden Knights either.
It didn't work for NBC either, did it?
It didn't work for NBC, and it didn't work for the Golden Knights. You know, and
I imagine it was Mike Milbury, and we shouldn't trust anything he says.
Yeah, well, it's true. The story of that image, I guess, that the Knights had that season was kind of like around Reeves, remember, and the altercation he had with Graves in front of the net and ripping his hair out and all that weird stuff.
Was horrible.
You know, like that didn't work. It doesn't work. Follow Reeves around and find out which team is still valuing that, and you're going to find the team that's probably pretty good but going to lose when it gets time to play hockey. Because Reeves is like if Curtis McDermott were not nice on the ice like we talked about, he would be like Ryan Reeves, right? And we would see more of that nasty streak come out in him. We just don't see it because it's not there. And we don't to pretend like that sort of style is winning hockey. It's only winning hockey if it's a part of your game, not your entire game. That's my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. We did talk about who to replace on the defense if the Avs keep around all these guys who are coming, excuse me, when all these guys come back from injury. And the Avs are said to be primarily healthy after the break. I know today that Manson and Makar were skating. Manson in a red no-contact jersey, Makar back in black. Do we have any other health updates for anybody?
Yeah, Byron was out there before the team got started. So it's good to see that he's still continuously skating. Malgin was out there as well, so he might be another guy that they're looking at after the break. I think Benner said something about because the break, something like 10 days, there's really no reason to play any of these guys before the break, so I'd say he's on the horizon as well. I think we mentioned last time maybe he was scheduled to be out about a month, which seems to track. So I think that's where they're at now. EJ did not practice, they said it's maintenance, but that's just code for like
we don't
injured, but not injured enough to not play yet.
Yeah,
we'll see.
Yeah.
He was getting
extra minutes, and then he had that shift where it looked like he maybe turned an ankle falling, diving to knock a puck away from the net. So it makes sense that he's taking a day off.
So maybe he's a little bit of a question mark for the Washington game, and Makar practiced fully, so he's probably good to go. I think a lot of it is up to him, and sometimes I think he can be a little bit more conservative than maybe some other players are, but, you know, he knows what's best for himself. So I think that's where we're at. Yeah, knock on wood, hopefully nobody else gets hurt during the week, and then with a nice 10-day break, maybe could be looking at the mythical mostly healthy maybe.
Yeah, I think when guys start to come back, I wouldn't be surprised if you see EJ start taking some nights off as like a healthy scratch, quote unquote.
We all kind of wish that would happen, and just Bednar doesn't do that. Like he's just very much like, this is the group, we want the group to be together, we want them to just have this like cohesion and this consistency. And it's, you know, like he wasn't giving Helm nights off. He just never did that. He didn't do it with Bellmare. Just sometimes we just wish that, like, is there any need to play these guys at the end of their career every single night? And yet they do.
Yeah, especially guys like Darren Helm, where, like, the only reason you get him is for the playoffs, right? Like, that is the main reason that you get, you know, the Darren Helms, the Andrew Coglianos. Like, those guys should be getting some rest so that they can, you know, be a full go come playoff time.
So I hope, fingers crossed, I guess there's always the potential for that. But I don't know. I don't see Bednar doing it, but hey, you never know. Maybe this year he's got to reimagine a few things to be able to get through this season and hopefully be able to make an impact in the playoffs again.
Yeah, and while we're in this area, I do want to touch on EJ. I mean, he's been stepping up in the absence of Makar. I think he's played really well in these last few games, and I love to see it. He's obviously not the flying condor that we got used to in his younger days, but I love his game when he's playing smart, and he has been. He's been conserving his energy, being in the right spots, and making just the nice little plays that need to be made. It's good to see.
I think that's part of it is like Gerard's doing all the skating. He doesn't have to skate anymore with the puck.
That's true.
but yeah, like it seemed like he was a little bit rough for the beginning of the year, but it's like the more they've asked of him, the better he's been. So I guess that's definitely encouraging.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's funny. I saw like I don't know if it was the Canucks or Calgary, but he like did one of his patented coast to coast kind of routes. And got to the opposite end in the corner. And you could see, like, even in his eyes, he just kind of dumped it in the corner and turned around. And he was absolutely gassed heading back to the bench. And I imagine in his mind, he was like, yeah, that's not a thing anymore for me. I'm not going to try that anymore. I just thought it was funny because that was like, he used to do that against his old team, the Blues, all the time. I felt like to make a point. But yeah, the coast to coast condor, he might be extinct at this rate.
But he's
got to really conserve those legs.
The Athletic came out with updated player cards, which are just analytics reports on players that judge how much their market value is and how much value they have based on their contract. And Eric Johnson, obviously, at his $6 million number is overpriced, but they graded his market value at $3 million, which is, you know, a high-end third-pairing defenseman, low-end second-pairing defenseman. And I think that's fair. His play recently has really borne that out. And I don't think he's, like, cooked, which we may have been saying earlier in the year or at points last year even, where he was really playing poorly. But he seems to have rounded into a form where he is a good third-pairing defenseman and a capable second-pairing defenseman right now, which is great.
Yeah, that was one of my concerns as the injuries mounted was, you know, him having to play more and more minutes at this age, like, would we start to see a decline? And so it's been really encouraging seeing the opposite, that essentially as, you know, he's had more and more thrown on his plate, he's gotten better and better as the season has gone on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and just to bounce a little bit off your player card stuff, I also, thanks to you, saw Evan Rodriguez's player card, and I thought it was fascinating that his market value is $100,000 above what Calgary paid Nazem Kadri to come be a Calgary Flame.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you think about that, he's being paid $2 million a year, and according to these analytics, he's worth just as much as Nazem Kadri. So good moves right there from the Avalanche management, obviously.
Absolutely. Yeah, Go ahead.
I mean, Rodriguez is definitely overplaying his, what, $2 million salary. So he's definitely bringing value there. I don't love the model from The Athletic as much because I think it's interesting to compare within a team to see who is performing better or worse. But, like, those market values are out of whack. Like, Makar is like, 19 million, which, okay, we can say, like, he's worth that much, but he literally can't be paid that
much.
Yeah,
that's true. Yeah.
Right, yeah, it's not actual salary. It's just how much value they're returning on their dollar in terms of production on the ice generally. And it's not even, like, it doesn't really do a very good job of factoring in underlying statistics. It is truly production because, like, yeah, Sam Girard is rated league minimum. Not to go back to Sam Girard. It's really unfair to him on that card. Because his defensive underlyings are, like, pretty good, but then all of a sudden because his offense isn't as high as it used to be, he's rated so poorly. It's not fair. But it is, I do think it's interesting. Like, there are so many different forms of analytics that you have to just take them all in and see, like, okay, how does this mesh with what I'm seeing? And what do I believe? What do I like? What do I take away? And you're right. These player cards are a little bit unfair, but they're fun to talk about.
As a comparison, like, all within the same context. So, like, all on the same team, it's interesting to see, like, how they would slot. It's just harder to, like, compare. Like, Adrian brought up Kadri. I'm gonna bet that his player card's higher than $7 million. So it's like, you know,
that's a good point.
I don't know, some of their models they come up with, it's like, yeah, you, you definitely have to just kind of make sure you're comparing apples to apples with that stuff.
Yeah, that Girard one doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. I mean, like, you know, just going by goals, we don't even need to, you know, go crazy. There are three teams in the NHL that have allowed less goals than the Colorado Avalanche have all year, and you're telling me that the defenseman who plays 20 minutes a night is worth the league minimum? Like, it doesn't square.
No, it's crazy. It's crazy. I picked up Kadri's, and it is actually $7.2 million.
Oh, so is it? Okay, all right.
100,000 more than Rodriguez, but they've got his defensive metrics really poor on this card, Kadri's, and I mean, we know from experience as Avalanche fans that he can be a really effective suppressor. So,
and I think all of the Avs get sort of, I don't know if you want to say overvalued, but given a lot of credit for their defense just because, and I think the model the Athletic uses, I think they combine the last three seasons. So it's not just this year. Mm-hmm. So especially with how strong the Avs were defensively last year and the year before as well. So, like, everybody on the Avs is going to have, like, a lot of value in the defense. Like, if you look at Compher's, he's like at 89 percentile, which I know that you all maybe like Compher more than I do, but he's probably, I mean, can we admit he's probably not that high defensively?
They've got him at the 92nd percentile,
Something like that. So that's stretching a little bit. You know, Peter Baugh, you know, he does great work, but it's funny, he always mentions, like, oh, Compher is such a strong defensive player. Like, he's one of the league's best. It's like,
I would say it's more about, like, his effort than his defense. I think that's what people get confused with a lot. Is like,
but he has been. I will say that he has like really well made his game more mature and rounded his game more. I will give him credit for that. But
yeah, this year his defense has been very good. I would say I think he's really really stepped up. Over his career, that's 97.
That's not it.
Yeah. They also have the picture of JT in the player card, just to illustrate how maybe these guys are a little out of touch. In the picture, he's wearing an A. He hasn't worn an A in a long time.
I'm not even sure when that was.
I want to say like 4 years ago. I don't know if I'm right, but that's what I want to say. But we have a new
or it could be preseason. Sometimes you can find pictures where somebody wore an A in preseason. It's like, when did this guy ever wear an A? And it's because they were handing them out to whoever back then.
But we do have a newcomer here on the podcast right now. Our managing editor, Evan is here. Welcome, Evan. How are you?
Very new, obviously. I just started yesterday.
Newcomer today,
rising the ranks.
No, you just made it to here today. That's all I mean. And I know that you had something you wanted to talk to everybody about to end this pod today.
Yes, I hate to end it on bad news. I just got out of another meeting, also talking bad news, but that's my own personal things. So sorry, you don't get those stories. But
tell us later.
Sure. basically, I wanted to come on here and address kind of the elephant in the room for what has been the last kind of 72 hours. With SB Nation and Vox Media and all of the crap that's gone down, to say it nicely. So basically, Friday morning is when we were told and, you know, had received emails about changes that were going on at Vox Media, which included my boss, Steph Driver, who was the managing kind of editor of all of the NHL and all of the hockey sites for SB Nation, was getting laid off, and that she was part of the 7% or so that would be cut, and that then it would be affecting what was it, the soccer sites, the majority of hockey sites. I know there were a few others in there, but I don't remember exactly off the top of my head. College basketball, things like that. So of course, in this panic on Friday morning, all of the site managers were receiving emails saying, your site will no longer be supported by Vox Media, at the end of February. And then, Mile High Hockey is one of six that is going to be remaining moving forward. So the six remaining are us, Canes Country covering the Carolina Hurricanes, Pensburg covering the Pittsburgh Penguins, All About That Jersey covering New Jersey, the Devils, Lighthouse Hockey covering the New York Islanders, and Stanley Cup of Chowder covering the Boston Bruins. Every other site is going to be non-functioning by the end of February. And I put that in quotes because at least from the sounds of things, we're not 100% certain yet, but other sites, they will still be up, like online. You can read their things. They're not going away. And it sounds as though, as if Vox Media wants people to continue writing and producing things for the site unpaid. Which
sure they'd love that. Yeah,
they would love that. And it's something that has been used and taken advantage of by Vox Media. That's how I started at Mile High Hockey. I started as an unpaid contributor, and have just kind of worked up. Most people start like that, or start with a very low pay. I can say that everybody in this room, in this Zoom call, does so much great work and does so much for this community, and do not get paid anywhere near close enough to make that happen. It's all a passion thing for us, I think, if I had to guess. And of course, just outside of this room too, but the entire Mile High Hockey staff, you know, that's just how we've been, and we've been trying to do it for obviously this great community that we have. And while we're fortunate to still have this community for the time being, we're going to be losing a lot of many others, which is a really, really big shame. So in case you missed my announcements, I wrote a whole and kind of initial letter reaction on Friday morning, and then one just as of recording today on Monday, Monday morning, just kind of telling people how to support us, how to keep us going here for at least a little bit longer. And so kind of the way that will happen is that, unfortunately, the people above me, all they care about are the clicks, the views, the traffic, and the ad revenue that they get from our websites, pretty much. That's the way they look at it, and that's the way they determine our budget and who gets paid and who doesn't get paid, so on and so forth. Meeting a quota, all those fun business things that this college student is learning right now who's not a business student. But anywho, so, you know, just we've been trying our best to kind of go with it. And, you know, as I said too in our piece this morning, is that We've been trying to move away from clickbait articles as much as possible, because obviously they will get you clicks and views and all those things that people above me love. But that's not what I wanted us to be. I had dreams and hopes that we would become, you know, a lot more professional and, you know, maybe one day end up in the press box up at Ball Arena, to give this great community even more bigger, better, exclusive coverage of the Avalanche that you could find only here and not anywhere else. With that being said, I don't think we're going to be around too much longer with all of the other ships burning and sinking around us. Just wanted to address that. And I know it's unfortunate for a lot of people. I know we're very fortunate, at least here at Mile High Hockey, the five of us in this room, we're still going to get paid. We're still going to be able to write for at least a little bit longer about this great hockey team. So the best way for you all in the community to support is to keep clicking, share, follow us on Twitter, retweet on Twitter, do all those things to make the numbers, good. And I hate that I have to ask for that, but that's just kind of the way that it has to be, at least for now, to keep us here for as long as we can be. If we could just do that, that would be great. And I think kind of the last thing I have to say about this is that, pre-Ezra and Jacob era of Mile High Hockey, things were tough. It was really tough. Adrian and Jackie, they can relate to that. They can kind of understand and recognize that probably if this had happened a year ago, January 2022, the Mile High Hockey would definitely be one of the 28 or 27 other sites that are going to be shutting down and not being financially supported. So to that, I say, who knew that a Stanley Cup win would be so influential in more ways than one?
Yeah.
End it on that good note.
Winning
always helps. Exactly. And I know Adrian too, you also had things about specifically about the podcast that all
yeah,
of you
I just,
talk about.
I just wanted to let our audience know that like we're not going anywhere in terms at least of doing what we do here on the podcast. I take a lot of pride in the fact that a lot of this stuff we put together privately outside of the support of our parent company. With that being said, you know, in the future, if there is some site changes and we're told we can't use certain names or stuff like that, that might happen. We'll do our best to kind of not lose track of where our stuff lands on the streaming platforms. I know how to do that already. So there's definitely going to be, some changes, but just know that the crew here, we're not going anywhere. Like Evan alluded to before, this is mostly a passion for all of us. Like the budget we're on right now gets me a couple bags of chips and a Gatorade at the convenience store, which is nice. I'm not going to sit here and say like it's not nice to be paid to do something, whatever amount it is. And I feel for the people who are, you know, losing even whatever small source of income they were getting from these projects, like that's a shame, and I'm really sorry for those people. I will say, you know, we'll be a platform even for those folks on those other sites, because I still have all those contacts, I still know all those people. We're still going to get those people on our programs and go support these individual writers. Now, you know, if the site's not a thing, go search out these people. They're going to be popping up in other areas. There's obviously a demand for the services that we provide. It's just that the company we're being asked to provide them for is willing to ask us to do that for free, which isn't something that most companies are willing to do. It's kind of run rampant here in the journalism department these days. But circling back to the podcast, like the lab is not going anywhere. We're still going to be here to do live polls that piss you off. We're still going to be here to let Jackie just chew your ear off about who's injured and who's not. And we're still going to be here for Jacob to tell you that, you know, Curtis McDermott isn't the fit and that he shouldn't be the seventh defender. So we're not going anywhere.
We'll talk about that every week.
Yeah. Just stay tuned and share us with your fellow Avs fans. And just know that, like Evan said, the clicks and the stuff, that's what's going to keep us around. but the support and the passion that we've already seen is why we probably won't ever put this away or put it to bed, at least personally. So thank you for your time. Oh, yeah, go ahead, Jack.
I just want to say something real quick before you like wrap all of it up.
Oh yeah.
Because I think you're heading that way. But for me personally, I started at Mile High Hockey in 2017. I was not paid a dime for 5 years. So I created content. You know, I am willing to create content to keep the community going if it comes to that, you know.
Yeah.
It definitely wouldn't be at the frequency that you are seeing today, but to go off on your passion point, like the money isn't why we all are here, and it would be a shame to see the support go away, but we will find other ways to keep it going if we are allowed to keep it going on the site. That could be an avenue we explore and see what that looks like. But, you know, when I was brought in, it was never even mentioned to me that it was working towards getting paid. Same. My impression until really recently was that only the managing editor would be getting paid, and everyone else was just, it was up to you if you wanted to do it, if you didn't. Like, I don't feel taken advantage of because I wasn't under any other impression.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, to me, I'm just thankful that I was ever paid at all, and I'm thankful that it will continue for however long it is. But that's just so not what this site and this community was about. And so we're going to be able to figure something out. And I know the community is so strong across all platforms. I know Mile High Hockey is just one slice of it. And I'm very grateful for anybody that straddles those lines, that is a part of a bigger community somewhere else, and they still come and comment or listen to us. And so there's just going to be a lot of ways to continue what we've built.
Yeah. And just to double down on that, like, yeah, I didn't know that getting paid was a thing until Thomas and Steph, when she told us
a little bit of a secret.
Yeah, it's like, oh yeah, there's a budget. Yeah. Well, what do you know? So yeah. Evan, thank you, and
yes.
Big shout out to like Thomas and Steph for the work that you mentioned. You know, like a year ago, we probably wouldn't have made the cut, so to speak. And a lot of that has to do with those two. So big shout out to them, and thanks to them for their hard work and enabling us to do what we do still.
Absolutely. And I mean, I applied last year under the assumption that I was doing it for fun. And then,
same here.
And then Evan this year was like, okay, and you're getting paid this much. And I'm like, I am?
Hi. It's so much money. It's so much.
Yeah. Evan, thank you. And thank you for handling being the bearer of bad news on all of this and keeping us informed and keeping the audience informed.
We'll be all right.
We're going to be all right. Yeah, we're going to
be all
right.
Yeah.
We'll make it through.
And but, just before we finish, we're going to end by rediscussing the live poll just once.
Oh, no.
Yes. I did not see the live. I'm going to go to Twitter right now.
We got
156. Yeah, 156 voters. We got 6% of them voted for Sam Girard to be benched in the event that these Avs. 49% Curtis McDermott, 35% Jacob McDonald, 10% Brad Hunt, 6% Sam Girard. So he's the least. And some of the comments are funny. Girard over England? Come on. The fact that Girard is even on this list is laughable.
The Girard over England one is particularly funny because it starts with, the fact Girard is on this list is laughable. I would, and then somebody else is like, Girard over England? Come on.
I see R. Eddie already commented on Girard over England. Come on. Mm-hmm. Bench the people saying Girard. That's a great comment.
Right. Yeah, that is great.
It's I wish
we
I
had a good that. Rant about it. This
I was
is
gonna
definitely
say.
Oh yeah. Yeah, we
this
got
is definitely
we got mad.
Not the Sam Haters Club.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's see. I'm gonna
we
do
got,
the
we got
I'm
very
do
mad at that 6%.
I'm eager to listen back and hear the conversation.
Girard wasn't the Brad Hunt was in the lead for a while, not Girard. So I'm glad it flipped because people are wizening up a little bit. But
nine people. There's so just to let the record show that's only nine people. So that's not ten. There aren't ten people on this earth that think that. Hopefully, Hopefully it just stays at 9.
I'm going to vote for Sam Girard just so that I
just
can
to put it over.
I do have to agree with Eddie that putting Girard on this list enabled the trolls. But you know what?
It was my idea. So like I know we were walking into.
Here's the thing. Maybe it enabled the trolls, but like I've responded, it also highlights the fact that these trolls exist. And yes, these trolls should be talked about because we need to get rid of them.
We're doing a public service here.
Yeah, that's
their
whole point.
I'm actually surprised it's that low, honestly.
Yeah.
I bet you one of those 9 is the guy in Calgary who had the Trey Girard sign.
We've kicked that guy out of the fandom.
I already did my you're no longer allowed rant for him. So and just to double back to that, like, hit me up, bro. Let's talk because you need some help. You need some help. I'll get you back into loving your team instead of hating them.
We'll have an intervention. Let's have my
pod fix this.
Yeah, we'll bring him on. That would be a good episode. Hey, we have the guy who hold the Trey Girard sign on our cast. Come talk shit. Yeah. Right on, y'all.
We probably shouldn't have this conversation on air. Maybe edit this out if you want, but we could have audience members on as guests sometimes to see what their concerns are about the.
Yeah, we did a disabuse them of their crazy like notes. Me and Evan did a spaces after a couple of games, and we got some visitors that we did not know who these people were. They were talking not about the Avalanche, so we'll do that. But we're gonna have to vet in
another language for a while.
Yes, yes. Oh, and wow. Who knows? God knows what they were saying. Like, no offense, I just didn't know what language it was. Yeah, so it could have been terrible.
I think it was French, if I had to guess.
Yeah,
but
yeah, that sounds right.
Hey, put it on the idea board. We need things. We need
put
clicks.
A pin in it.
We need to. We need
just do a bunch of so trade speculation articles. That'll be enough clicks for the whole year.
Yeah, if we've got this Trey Girard poster guy on our podcast, I guarantee we'll get clicks on.
I have comments about the whole thing and the trade speculation, but I'll keep that for off air.
Fair enough.
Well, then, since I'm excited to hear about that, let's get off the air. this has been another great episode of the Mile High Hockey Lab. On behalf of everybody here at Mile High Hockey, I'm Matthew Parker. We appreciate you listening. Tune in next week. It's cold.